podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Neil Atkinson joined by Miguel Lorenzo Pereira to talk about Amorim, Ruben Amorim, who is currently the hot favourite to be the next Liverpool manager. Miguel's got a book that came out late January that may well be worth you checking out if you are interested in Portuguese football. It's called Bring Me the Horizon, a journey to the soul of Portuguese football. We will be having a longer chat about that in the coming weeks, and I'm looking forward to that immensely. But for now, one of the key things, Miguel, I want to start this on is the significance of the job Amorim has done in Portuguese football. With Lisbon, with Sporting Lisbon, he won the first title for that club in 19 years. Since then, there's been a runners-up position. They're now in prime position to win it again. That is quite significant, isn't it, in the history of Portuguese football?
It is. Thank you for inviting me, Neil, first. And it is so significant that if he wins the league, which is probably what is going to happen in a couple of few weeks, because Sporting is playing really well. They have 4 points advantage of Benfica and a game in hand. So they will probably clinch the title in the forthcoming weeks. He will be the first Sporting manager to win the league twice over the last 6 decades. So that means a lot for Sporting as an institution, for Sporting fans, and above all to the idiosyncrasy of football in Portugal, because Sporting was once the greatest club in Portuguese football until the 1960s, until Eusebio appeared and Benfica started to win not only leagues but also European Cups as well. And until that moment, Sporting was the number one team in the land. They had the better players, they had fantastic teams, they won 4 titles in a row in the late 40s, early 50s, so they were pretty much a dominant side like no one has ever seen in Portuguese football back in the day. And then with the rise of Benfica first and Porto then during the 1980s until now, Sporting kind of lost its relevance in the competition. They lost a lot of fans because Portugal, being a duopoly from between Benfica and Porto over the past 40, 50 years, the new generations were probably more into the winners, or they were more into being a Benfica supporter or a Porto supporter. So Sporting, being of Lisbon, having a great history, they never really fought for the title in many seasons. They won in 2000 and then in 2002. That put an end of another period of 18 years without titles. They had early won in 1982, and then there were like 18 years of deserts of very good teams that didn't quite get the opportunity to claim the titles. And then from 2002 until Amorim's arrival, another long period without glory. And then he came and he changed the club completely. In a couple of weeks, he just changed their identity. They changed the way they play. They changed the way the mentality of the club started to be more resembled to himself. He is a very calm man, a very club man. He's not the typical Portuguese manager that you may think of. He's not a Mourinho or anything like that. He doesn't like to do mind games. He doesn't like to lure the press into turning the team in his favor, or the fans getting roar against the referee. Is quite the opposite. Is a very silent, likes to work in the shadows. And everything that he has done for Sporting has probably made them one of the 2 or 3 more important managers in the club's history.
When you say he came and he changed everything quickly. What precisely did you mean? Because he did win that title in his first season there as manager. Is this tactical? Is it technical? Is it a cultural change? Is it all the above? What was it that he managed to change so quickly at Sporting?
It's a bit of everything, really, because tactically, he changed everything. He plays in a 3-4-3. Never a Sporting manager ever played in that shape. So basically, he started to look for players, cheap players, because Sporting was in a very difficult situation financially. So he started to look for cheap players from the Portuguese league that would comply the roles that he really wanted. Sporting was famous for having either great players past their A day, so they were basically on high salaries, but they were not giving as much on the pitch that the fans would hope for, or they would be youth players from the academy, a very famous academy worldwide. Of course, everybody knows about Figo, about Simão Sabrosa, Quaresma, Nani, Cristiano Ronaldo, of course. So they already had a great youth prospect, but it started to give them first minutes in the team. Mm-hmm. And with that, it created a tactical shape that was different to everything Portuguese football has ever seen before. Portuguese football is always about the 4-3-3, 4-2-3-1, 4-4-2. And his 3-4-3 made quite an impact in matches. And then his mentality, a club that was known for having a pessimist attitude towards every season. Supporting fans would usually start the season, and the first thing they would say, in which month are we going to stop fighting for the league and we're starting to fight to enter in the Europa League? And he changed that all together. He started to talk on the press conference about the importance of creating a winning culture, that every victory matters. Even winning the League Cup, we've seen Portugal as a very minor trophy, became very important to him, and he won two in a row. He had one with Braga, the team he was coaching before Sporting. So he understood the importance of silverware for creating a team that became used to win. And that what he achieved in the first season was immense. Of course, it was the COVID season as well. So you have that reality that we were playing with empty stadiums at first, then half empty stadiums. Mm-hmm. And that somehow created a feeling at first that if the fans were not there in the stadium to put an extra pressure on the players would perform better, because Sporting Stadium was considered to be toxic, even by their own standards, by their own managers, because they were very demanding, usually for a team that didn't deliver. And he managed to transform that feeling and became a very passionate manager towards the fans on the stadium. So now the stadium roars, the stadium applauds like they never seen before. And this title that they are probably going to win this season is as much a title of his as also from the fans, who began to appreciate what he has done for the club, started to support the team 100%. And that was something that he achieved that no other sporting manager over the years had achieved before.
When we therefore think of him in terms of building that team, building that approach, in his first season, what underpinned that? Because it wasn't quite as sort of a, you mentioned there as well, obviously the circumstances with COVID, it wasn't quite as free scoring a team as the side has been this season. It wasn't quite as filled with attacking talent because he hadn't had that long to bring players in. Did he build it with a solid basis at the back and then look to develop that as he moved along?
Exactly. His first approach was, if they don't score against us, the probability of winning is bigger. So despite playing a 3-4-3 that some consider that is a very offensive tactic, and it might be, it was also a way of having three central defenders that were very, very apt to impede strikers from the rival teams to score. And basically, Portuguese football has a situation where you have the bigger teams, of course, Benfica, Porto, Sporting, having all the quality players. And then you have a lot of mid-table to lower-table teams that usually plays on the counter. They don't usually put two men in front. So basically, having three centre defenders, the ability to left the right wing back and the left wing back to be like wingers, really, on the attack, allow him to create a series of situations that would supply the absence of a great goal scorer, something that he has this season in Victor Gyökeres, who played for Coventry City, of course. In those first years, he didn't have a striker that was as capable as the Swedish to score goals, but he fought a lot. He's also a guy that is very stubborn when he wants a player, and he's not the one that will be happy if you bring a lesser player. He prefers not have any player at all. And he was very adamant that he wanted Paulinho, who was a player that had played for him at Braga, as a centre forward, because he is a forward very different from Joker, as a forward that can play with his back on goal, more similar to the Roberto Firmino style. And he thought it was more important to have a striker of that characteristics with that team, because the ability of release the players who were on the wing, or to allow the players who are in the middle of the park to come and take chances from afar, it was more important in that 3-4-3. This season, he changed his approach. Paulinho is now a sub for Gyökeres because he found that having a forward that can attack at the back of the defense is more apt to the style of play that he's trying to play this season, more offensive than that first version of his Sporting side.
On the side that he has in the gap in between, I'm struck by that season where he finishes runner-up. And the reason why is because he actually gets the same number of points as the year before. So they win the league in his first season with 85 points. The following season, he still gets 85 points. It's that Porto basically play 34 league games and only lose one, which is, you know, a very, very significant achievement. It feels on that one, he was therefore able to build. He gets out of his Champions League group. There's a couple of questions around the European performance, but that season he gets out of the Champions League group with Sporting, and obviously they run into Manchester City in the last 16. That can happen to anyone. Manchester City are a great side and it's a much bigger budget. But he was able to, wasn't he, to build on that first season into that second season and still, again, won a trophy as well, still be able to build his side and put his principles in place. And actually, they score more goals in his second season than they do in his first.
What he did that season was very important because, like I said before, Sporting had a very toxic environment.
Yeah.
And they would usually sack managers in the second season after they won the title. That's why there's very hard to find managers with Sporting that won two titles because they usually are not a very patient club. It had happened when they were champions in 2000. They sacked their manager like half of the following season because he wasn't performing. It happened in 2002 when they won the league. The following year, they sacked their manager half the season because they weren't performing. So on that second season, one of the things that he managed to change the club's culture was, we have an idea. We cannot win every single season because we have two great opponents in Porto and Benfica, but we can create a winning culture by accepting that we are not going to win every single year, but we're going to compete every single year. And the fans accepted that, and the board accepted that. So in that sense, that season was very important. Despite not winning the title, he was able to show that what he was saying was true, that Sporting could still compete despite not winning, despite playing the Champions League, was just something, a competition that haven't been played for a long year. So basically what he did there was he just performed, like you said, as equal as the season before. He just got unlucky because Porto had a great start for the season. They had Luis Diaz, then they sold Luis Diaz to Liverpool in January. But that first part of the season of Porto was absolutely perfect, and you cannot fight perfection. And in the matches between both, Porto won one and draw another, and that was the gap in the end of the season. So basically, he showed that the club was there to fight for titles every single year.
That third year then, when it does begin to go just a tiny bit wrong, get a slightly difficult Champions League group, Eintracht Frankfurt, they're in very, very good shape. It seems to me as though, for me, this is a good thing, because managers, I like the idea that managers have to come back from a bit of adversity, have built a culture, have built a framework, have explained their ideas to people, go through something where it doesn't quite work as much as they'd like, and then they build again. You know, to me, that's why thinking about last season and this season as part of a piece, he obviously loses a couple of players after two good seasons. So, João Palhinha leaves the club for a significant sum of money to Fulham in that period. There's a couple of others who move away from the club. Nunes goes to Wolverhampton Wanderers. But again, to your point, he ensures the club doesn't panic. He keeps everyone together. I'm sure he was coming under pressure. And now we've got this season where he's doing ever so well. To me, I think that speaks volumes of him as a personality, as someone who's been a cultural leader, that he was able to keep all of that going and keep it together to then build this year.
And that's why I say he's a club manager, because he always sees the long term, really.
Yeah,
and in that year, like you said before, he loses what was the basis of his side. It's Nunes and Palhinha playing in midfield. They were the key cornerstone so that Sporting could be as aggressive in pressing, as good as defending. And he also had two other issues. Coates, who played for Liverpool, of course, was getting older. He was not as fast as he once was. So basically, he was more fragile to counters. And Antonio Adán, the Spanish goalkeeper, who had been absolutely superb the first 2 years, had a drop in shape. So you lose your pillars in the midfield. Your centre-back is getting older. Your goalkeeper was performing spectacularly well, dropped in shape, so you're more prone to suffer goals. And at the same time, he was still trying to manage what was the best option for central striker to provide the goals the other players weren't providing. And once again, showing that he was a club manager, he was told by the club, we can sign a certain player for less money and you have him now, but he's not the player that you really want. Or we can find you next year the player that you want for the money that they are asking, if you are able to wait. Another manager, the one who thinks on the short term, would say, no, bring me a player now. I don't care who he is. He will perform. I will get results. But he was a club man. He said, no, we can do what we can do this year. We'll try to get on the top three, play European football, do our best in the Europa League. They eventually beat Arsenal. They were only beaten by Juventus by a very unlucky second game. So he saw the long term. And with the curriculum he was having at the time, being a Portuguese manager, being Portuguese managers as requested today as they are in the market, he could have just left. He had offers to go not only to Saudi Arabia, of course, but to important football leagues. But he decided to stay and to fight for another season and to show that his idea is going to work, and is now getting a reward for that.
As part of that then, looking at the season you mentioned before about Caceres and that shift, what strikes me again at this idea of him being a club manager, Gyökeres' return is unbelievable. It's 36 goals in 42 games. But Paulinho, to say that he's become obviously the second choice man, he's on 18 goals in 39 appearances, not tons of starts, but being introduced from the bench, but still feeling part of it. Again, this idea of a culture and being part of something that grows, that to me seems, you know, I had a look in, obviously, preparation for us having this conversation, and one of the things that struck me is the extent to which the appearances are shared around in this side. He very much has a squad mentality. Players are coming in and out. There's been the European experience as well. He's been very, very committed. There's only really two or three who come over as though they are the nailed-on starters, especially in that midfield and attack on Calvez, Gyökeres in there as well, Santos to an extent. Everybody else in that midfield and attack, they have to wait their turn. But when they get their turn, they appear to be grabbing the chances, and that's why they're top of the league.
And of course, he always has an eye for you prospects. You have, for instance, Katamo, who is the right wing back that practically won them the league the last week. And when they beat Sporting, he scored two goals. First time he scored two goals in a match. He's from Mozambique. And he was a player that he was discarded by other lower teams in Portugal. They didn't see potential in him, but Amorim saw potential in him. So he brought him. He was working with him for half a year, just trying to improve his tactical perception of the game to make him fit to play in that position. And in the second half of the season, he's playing wonderfully well there. And they had invested a lot at the summer in Ivan Fresneda, was a very huge prospect from Valladolid. It was being talked about to go to ever to the Premier League or to even Spanish Champions League and Europa League clubs. He signed for Sporting. He got injured. He didn't adapt very well. And he didn't complain. He found a solution that was already in the squad. He just worked the player out of the pressure of being the starter for the first part of the season. He adapted some players. And when he got him to perform, he duly did. So basically, that's also the mentality of being a squad leader that Almarina has shown over the years.
As with then an eye on the potential for the Liverpool job, Liverpool, a number of very good youth prospects at the minute. Obviously, it's a league not dissimilar to Portugal. Liverpool are a side that's run a much bigger budget than Sporting. It's a side that's, you know, is able to, it's won the second most league titles in English football history, and we hope this year we equal Manchester United, 6 European Cups. But the flip side is that idea of feeling as though you can win the league every year in English football is impossible for anyone apart from Manchester City. Anyone apart from Manchester City. So that idea of being able to bring people on a journey to me feels like almost the most important thing. So Liverpool have never had success with a back three. That's another thing that you mentioned with Sporting. You know, that these parallels are there all the way through this. Liverpool, Jurgen Klopp has been an expert in saying, if I can't get the central defender I want, I will wait for Virgil van Dijk. If I can't get the goalkeeper I want, I will wait for Alisson Becker. These parallels just appear to me as you're speaking to be there between Sporting and Liverpool, between Amorim and Klopp, despite the fact that there is this significant formation tactical difference.
The greatest difference, I don't know if Amorim will be able to perform in a different tactical shape, but I remember Klopp Dortmund was very different from Klopp's Liverpool tactically. So he was also a man that from the Mainz days and the Dortmund days played in a certain way. Of course, his principles have stayed, all the gegenpressing culture stayed with his Liverpool years, but he adapted. So I imagine Amorim being as clever as he is, if he finds that he has to adapt to the Liverpool squad, at least at the beginning, he will certainly do so, because he has that ability to understand the long term, as we saw. And basically, there's a lot of things that they share character. They are not very apt to search for more plain style of managing that we see in another type of football coaches, hello José Mourinho. And they are very much people who understand the power of having a happy squad, of having players that know they are important even if they don't play much. They work a lot the mentality, the psychological side, which is very important in football elite nowadays, because we came from an era where football players were used to have a 11 lineup that was the usual starters, then you had the sub benches, and now you have to have everybody's happy because everybody wants to renew a contract, everybody has an agent, everybody has social media, so everybody wants to feel included. And Amorim has shown in Sporting that he's able to do that, and surely he will be able to do that in the next job. And I know for sure that we'll leave Sporting this summer. So if it is Liverpool or if it's another team, I don't know, but for sure this is the end of his period Sporting, because he knows that he can do no better than this. Sporting will never win the Champions League, of course. Sporting will hardly win the Europa League as well. He might fight for it, but eventually that is not as interesting for him as a coach to work as to play in the Premier League, even if it's not with Liverpool, with a lower side like Brighton, if eventually it's the Derby, the one that goes to Anfield, like is also being talked about. So this is the opportunity to grab the man.
Do you think he'll be in any job, whatever his next job is, do you really feel as though he is the sort of coach who will be successful? It feels to me as though Klopp, Guardiola obviously at the highest level from a little bit earlier, but Klopp and Guardiola have changed football quite significantly, and both of them have remained at the forefront of the game for an extended period of time. It's Klopp who's stepping away first. Guardiola, though, the last couple of years, there's been, you know, managers who've clearly influenced by what Klopp and Guardiola have done in the late 30s, early 40s. Obviously, Alonso, you've got De Zerbi. There's a number of them in the Championship. There's Amorim. You know, these are now managers who've seen what Klopp and Guardiola have done. And it's took some time because Klopp and Guardiola have stayed at the forefront and have been influenced by each other and competed with each other. Do you feel Amorim is one of the coming men who will define the sort of the next 5-10 years of coaching at the highest level of the sport in Europe?
I have no doubt of that. And of course, it's normal that Klopp got tired first because he, with all respect for Liverpool and Dortmund, he was playing the underdog. Guardiola with Barcelona, with Bayern and with City has all the funds available to get the team that he wants. So he has more time to prepare his tactics because he knows that if he needs a certain type of player, he will get it. And Klopp was on the long run, both at Dortmund first and now with Liverpool. So that obviously takes a toll, bigger than if you have all the money available in the world to buy players and to do whatever you like. And I love Guardiola, the way he plays, and I love these ideas, but that's the truth. And basically, what you have, it's also the idea, and I'm a football historian, that usually football coaches wouldn't last more than 10 to 15 years being at the highest level. It was almost impossible to find a manager that would surpass the decade being really important. You have very few examples in football history. Even Bill Shankly wasn't able to be at the top more than 15 years. Don Revie, Bob Paisley, Alex Ferguson, he had to change a lot of the way he worked, but it was one of the few exceptions. But really, if Klopp has managed to do so for the last 14 years since he arrived at Dortmund, it fits the character of being there and knowing that his time has come and not wanting to become a Mourinho, a guy that was already in the elite for a lot of time and then he simply got away of what the game is now, what the game needs now. He isn't able to adapt, so he will probably become a lesser figure, not diminishing the role he had in the history of the game, of course. And the next generation, like you said, the guys that are coming, they are already drinking from the thoughts and the ideas of the Guardiola, of Klopp, and probably alongside men like Arteta, Xabi Alonso, Nagelsmann, Amorim for sure will be one of them.
Absolutely. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure, and we will do more of this, especially if Liverpool play Benfica in the next round of the Europa League, if both sides make it. But also in general, we will have a conversation about the history of Portuguese football with Miguel. I'm looking forward to it already, as I enjoyed that immensely. His book is called Bring Me the Horizon, A Journey to the Soul of Portuguese Football. It has been a pleasure to share this. There's all sorts of stuff on the Anfield Wrap about Amorim, a video I did about a few games recently looking at the statistical approach with Josh Williams. Two of those now on Amorim. We'll forget the ones we did about Xabi Alonso. We will remember the ones we did about Amorim. There's all sorts of managerial gutters, bits and pieces. This has been an absolute pleasure, though. Thank you very much to Miguel. And hopefully you'll be able to subscribe to the Anfield Wrap to hear more and more and more things about Amorim, if he indeed does become Liverpool manager. And if he doesn't, well, he's going to be a big figure in European football anyway, so we'll all learn a thing or two. And that's valuable as well. Thanks to Miguel, and we'll see you very soon. Sports Social Podcast Network.